Dubai Eye
103.8. We are going to hear now from Pamela Durant. Now, Pamela joins us live in studio. Pamela's son was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at just 20 months old. Aaron is now flourishing as a young man growing up now. How old is Aaron now?
He's 10.
10 years old and dealing with diabetes. And I suppose that's the phrase that I want to kick off with, if that's all right, Pamela, is that sort of dealing with. Because a lot of people hear the word diabetes, they think it's a life sentence straight away and they can't get on with it. But you're here to tell us that that's not the case.
That's very true. Yes, and it's dealing with it, it's managing it. In type 1, it never goes away. So you have to figure out how to live your life to the fullest. And you just happen to have diabetes as a part of it.
Can we take just a step back, actually, before that one? Because a lot of people texting in about the diagnosis of. And we were just talking there to Sarah. You were listening in as well to Dr. Sarah and her thoughts. From a mother's point of view, when you are so conscious of every little cough, every little sniffle that your child is making at those formative weeks and months just after birth. What was it for you that raised the red flag?
It was the drinking of the water.
Really?
And it was very interesting because I initially thought, it's August. It was August in Dubai, which is very hot. Why wouldn't you drink water? And it was actually our helper that said, no, I think it's really too much. And so one day we measured it, and he drank a liter and a half of water in addition to milk, juice, everything else that he was having. And it raised a red flag for me because, ironically, as a child, I had a dog that had an adrenal gland condition, and that dog was consistently tested for diabetes. So I knew drinking water and urination was a really big red flag for that. So I thought, let's go get this checked. Mm. And we went to his pediatrician, who is a very good one. And I said, do you think he could have type 1 diabetes? And the doctor said, no, it's not possible. We had no family history. He was a healthy growing boy. I was doing everything right, making my own organic baby food and everything. He said, but I'll test it just to give you peace of mind. I said, yes, please. I would like that. Mm. And his blood sugar was 640, which in a person without diabetes, it should be closer to 100.
Wow.
So then we started our journey.
That journey, as I mentioned, it's 10 years and counting now for that journey. It's been a decade. A difficult journey along the way? I mean, we talk about living with diabetes from the diabetic's point of view, but I suppose equally for you, your husband, for the rest of the family as well, it's been a journey for you all.
It has. When one person in the family gets diabetes, it affects the entire family. Relationships and just the way that you go about your everyday life. And it's incredibly difficult in the first year or so to find what the new normal is. Mm. And of course, it's shocking, it's upsetting, it's devastating. And meanwhile, you don't really have time to be too emotional about it, because at the same time, you have to really learn very quickly how to take care of your child day to day to save their life. So it's incredibly challenging. It does get easier to some extent. There's still many challenges that we face as they grow up, as they get older. And no two people with diabetes are ever alike. So what works for one person may not always work for the other. Mm. But it is incredibly challenging for me to sit here and tell you that, it's fine and it's easy would not really do it justice.
You just used that phrase, Pam, the new normal. Now, if someone is diagnosed later on in life, and we heard Dr. Sarah talking about, you know, old person's diabetes, et cetera, and something you might get later on in life because of family history, et cetera. The new normal becomes something that you can take on board and change your lifestyle accordingly. The new normal for someone at just 20 months old, moving through those bumps and bangs of a toddler and into the sort of the tantrums of a little older, and then, of course, trying to ingratiate yourself and incorporate yourself with kids in classrooms and playgrounds. Does that make it more difficult to make the new normal normal?
Absolutely. There's nothing normal about the new normal. For one, socially, of course, as you mentioned, for a child with a new diagnosis, it's incredibly difficult. when they're at school, they're going to the health office to get checked, and they always have a fear that they're missing out on something and they don't understand why.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're too small to even understand why they really have to do it. For the parents, there is no sleeping. We're up, we're checking at night to make sure blood sugars are okay. Learning how to count carbohydrates and measure food so we know how much insulin to give, because too much insulin can actually be deadly. All this focus suddenly on this condition also takes away focus from, you know, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your other children. Non-diabetic children, you know, might become jealous because the one child's getting so much attention. So there's so many different things to consider and deal with.
Given the figures that we are bombarded with here, with good reason, you know, it's all about raising that awareness. But the 2017 statistics, International Diabetes Federation, 17.3% of the UAE population between the ages of 20 and 79, type 2 diabetes, those figures going up. Epidemic is a word that's being used here as well. I go back to that phrase, the new normal. Is the awareness working to a certain degree? I mean, I suppose it's a difficult balance, isn't it? Because numbers are going up, so more and more people that we know are getting or being diagnosed with diabetes. But is the awareness going up alongside that as well?
To some extent, yes. I believe there's more awareness about the differences in, say, type 1, type 2 gestational. But I think there's also a lot of myths that, oh, if I just eat this, then I will be fine. Or if I eat this way, my diabetes will go away. So awareness is one thing, but I think now we need to take it a step forward from awareness to move forward about a little more public education about diabetes. Because I have yet to meet one person when I tell them my story or what I do about my son, and someone in their family has diabetes. The discussion always goes to their personal experience. Mm. So I think it's a little bit more about public education in addition to the awareness.
Pamela Durant, who's here in studio. She's a mum whose son has type 1 diabetes, was diagnosed at 20 months old. Aaron is now 10 years old and flourishing. We've come together to discuss all things diabetes here in the region and further afield. News, Pamela, from local sources here that there will be new clinics opened up here in the region. Are these specifically for diabetes, or certainly pointed towards diabetes?
Yes. Well, according to the news, there will be new diabetes clinics here. They'll be focusing on a lot of very high-tech, new technology to support patients. The details aren't out yet, but that's very exciting because there are so many cases of diabetes that we could use more focused clinics.
I read yesterday about these new smart clinics, the first of which had been opened in a dedicated DHA healthcare centre. That's the fifth of the smart clinics are now opened up around the UAE. Again, this is providing medicine, providing advice more quickly, more efficiently than we have done in the past. And I suppose that's going to be key in the fight against diabetes moving forward.
Very much so, because diabetes is not just a one-time thing. Mm. Traditionally, we go to our doctor, we'll see them for 15 minutes, but we on behalf of my son, have to deal with diabetes for 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. So to be able to have a clinic that might help us track things better, or be able to reach out to our doctors better would be extremely helpful.
It's interesting as well, isn't it? Because the whole idea behind the smart clinics is putting more empowerment to the patients as well. So saying, look, we can do so much, but you need to help control your health as well. So you get yourself in here and we've got everything there. It puts the onus on them to do the regular checks rather than depend on the medical infrastructure here.
Absolutely. And the more that you manage your diabetes, the more you become an expert in your own personal care. And my son uses technology. He has an insulin pump. He uses a continuous glucose monitor. And that gives us so much information. And we're able to make changes to doses now that we've been doing it for many years. Of course, we follow up with the doctor. He controls it, you know, to make sure that things, you know, look okay. But it does give you a lot more information and able to manage it so much more easily.
We've got Pamela here in studio, Pamela Durant, is here to talk diabetes. Why? Because Pamela's son was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at just 20 months old. Aaron is now 10 years old. He's bagging in the hoops on the basketball field. He's living a normal life, as normal as can be with diabetes. And that's the point we've been making. It is a normal life. Diabetes doesn't need to be an albatross that hangs around your neck. And is that something that that Aaron's come to terms with? Is it something that the family's come to terms with?
Absolutely. You know, in the beginning, I was really devastated and wondering, you know, how did this happen? You know, what did I do wrong? And for all you moms out there listening, there's nothing that you can do to avoid type 1. But he was diagnosed quite young, so he did not know life without diabetes. But we, you know, just try to embrace it, educate him as much as possible, educate ourselves, and deal with it.
You know how we were just reading out that message from Layla, and she was talking about diet and how diet really helped her as well. Is that a crucial part of the jigsaw?
It is, because we get energy from food, and the pancreas's job is all about converting that food into energy with insulin. So food plays a big role in it. However, many people sometimes think that, for example, in the case of type 1, that if my son just follows a certain diet, then he won't have to take insulin anymore. And that is not the case. A type 1 would die without insulin. In the case of many type 2s, they can reverse their symptoms or have very good management with a diet. What diet works for one person may not work for another person because no two people are alike. So, yes, food is really critical in this.
Sam joins us live on the line. Hey, Sam, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Tom. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, my friend. Good to have you on the line this Wednesday morning. Now, I like your text message. I like the phrase you use. We should all assume we have diabetes. Why?
Because it's a very common thing. You know, a lot of people have family histories of diabetes. The lifestyle we lead nowadays is completely, you know, it's chaotic and it's just making us more and more prone to diabetes. Food habits, everything. I mean, everything just makes us more prone, you know. We should all assume that we are at risk and get tested on a regular basis, because I'm pretty sure if people do, the people who especially thought that they were immune are the ones who would end up being diagnosed.
You get regular tests, do you?
Yes, I have a family history. Both my grandparents had diabetes. My dad has diabetes. So I get myself, I'm susceptible, but I'm not yet diabetic. So I'm controlling, you know, my sugar intake and everything. So I don't have to go into the dependency on insulin or anything like that. I'm trying to avoid the whole diabetic thing, and hopefully I'll keep it away for another few years.
And Sam, you mentioned the word lifestyle a little earlier on, and obviously it is a very unique lifestyle that we live here in the UAE. A lot of people work very hard, a lot of people play very hard as well, not a huge amount of balance out there. Is that something you're conscious of?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a classic example. You know, I am obese. So that's one of the reasons I'm susceptible to diabetes. Obesity is a major factor. And I mean, I've been here almost 30 years, right? And if you look at Dubai, you know, in the 1990s and even 80s, you would hardly get people who were obese because of the lifestyle those days. But then past the 2000s, when this whole explosion of development happened and more people came over, lifestyle changed, eating habits changed. Back in the day, we used to go to restaurants twice a month. Nowadays, people eat out literally 3-4 times a week, and they're also not healthy food, you know. McDonald's, I remember, came here in the late 90s. It was a huge thing. And before that, it was all, you know, restaurants serving family meals. So it's the eating habits is one of the major factors, and the lifestyle. You don't get time anymore for anything.
Appreciate your thoughts, as always, Sam. Keep up the good work as well. Thank you very much indeed for your call.
Thanks, Tom.
Good on you, Sam. Thanks very much indeed for that one. Pam, I just want to get your thoughts on misdiagnosis now. We sort of touched on this with your son. In terms of adults as well, and listening there to Sam and listening to the fact that he's conscious of it because of family history, you know, he's very honest as well about his own lifestyle, his own well-being, etc. Is it something that gets misdiagnosed? I mean, because Sam admitted that he's obese. Is there this sort of idea that if we are obese, we are more susceptible from diabetes, and therefore if we're not obese, we're not going to get it?
Absolutely. That's Very true. And I can't tell you the number of people that I've met that are not obese. They have an active lifestyle and they were diagnosed as pre-diabetes or with diabetes. Sometimes it's like in the case that we had earlier, the example of the yoga teacher, she had gestational diabetes. It stayed. And our genetic makeups are so unique and different that people can be diagnosed any shape, form, or size and have diabetes. It does happen.
There's one story that you picked up on from health24.com about type 1 diabetes often being misdiagnosed. And it's interesting as well. It sort of highlights a couple of high-profile, well-known individuals. And again, is that part and parcel of this awareness campaign to show that people live with it on a daily basis?
Yes, absolutely. You know, one reason I picked that story is because it is often misdiagnosed, particularly in children. It's often mistaken for flu because by the time the person with diabetic is so sick because they've had no insulin, they're vomiting. So immediately a doctor thinks it's a flu. Or early on when they start drinking too much water, they might think it's a urinary tract infection. It can be confirmed with a simple finger prick, and then they can decide to do other tests after that. So many children are often misdiagnosed. Same in adults, particularly type 1, because type 1 was always classified as juvenile diabetes, and only children got that. Now we're seeing adults that are 30, 40, 50 years old. Even Theresa May herself was diagnosed with type 1 as
Amazing.
An adult.
I had no idea.
Yeah, she doesn't talk about it often, but I think it became really apparent to all of us that have diabetes in our lives when one day she walked out on the lawn and we could see the device on her arm that she uses to check her blood sugar. So we all got a little excited that there was a high-profile person. Yes, she's one of us. And also type 2 can be diagnosed for the reasons I just mentioned. A person that's not overweight goes into their doctor's office and they say, oh, I'm feeling tired, not great. And sometimes they don't think to check blood sugar. So getting checkups are incredibly important, full checkups that include screening for diabetes.
Talking diabetes here in studio. And we've got Pamela Durant, who's here with us in studio, working through a few of these stories. We've talked about misdiagnosis. What about misinformation as well, Pam? Because how often do we open up newspapers or news cuttings or news sources and we're told, eat these foods and you'll be free of diabetes, or you won't get diabetes, you'll prevent diabetes, etc. Does that work?
It doesn't necessarily work. And I see these kinds of articles almost every day. And while there might be some truth to the healthiness of a particular food, eating 4 grapes a day, for example, I've actually seen that as an article.
No, really?
Eating 4 grapes a day is not going to cure anyone's diabetes. Anything that you eat needs to be part of a larger plan that's prescribed by your doctor, including exercise. And I'm talking about, you know, type 2 here. And, you know, the same for type 1s. Yes, if they eat more healthy food, the blood sugars tend to be much easier to manage versus if they eat not so healthy. But there is no one size fits all, and there is no one food that is going to cure everything.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because we often read these articles, as you say, and it's all about, you know, there's certain food stuff, etc. And yet when you actually delve into them a little deeper, it's just this philosophy of eating healthily, which we all try to do or aspire to do on a daily basis anyway, don't we?
Exactly. And diabetes or not, I would raise my son the same way. We eat healthy, everything in moderation. We like to eat, we like food, but we do try to eat healthy. And sometimes it's difficult when, you know, sometimes children at school, they're eating food all the time. I had this discussion with my son yesterday. He said, Mommy, can you please just like send some junk food in my snack? Because they have snack quite early in the morning. And I'm thinking nobody needs to have Oreo cookies at 8:30 in the morning or 9 o'clock or whatever. And my answer to him is, you know, everything in moderation. Diabetes or not, nobody needs to have a bag of marshmallows in their snack or Oreo cookies. We like them from time to time, but we don't eat them every day.
I'm interested to know if there is synergy as well, because one of the stories that you've brought to the table this morning is something from CNN. It goes longer and deeper than that, which is the Japanese philosophy of Ikigai, Which, in essence, is this idea of do what you love and you live longer. And again, is that a sort of philosophy that one needs to embrace in order to get through an adversity such as diabetes, which is not a disease per se, it is just a lifestyle change?
Absolutely. I don't use the word disease. I say diabetes is a condition.
Yeah.
I don't use the word diabetic because anyone with diabetes is so much more than this condition. And it's true. We always hear about the war on diabetes. And it sounds very violent. People out there fighting and sticking themselves with needles and fighting diabetes. But what we really need to do, and what I explain to people, and if I'm coaching someone as well, is embrace the challenge. Mm. It's not a great situation ever. It's not something that any of us want to have. But the sooner that we can embrace it and look for things to be grateful for. I'm not necessarily grateful for diabetes, but if I'm having a difficult day with managing my son's diabetes, I can look for other things to be grateful for. So the sooner that we embrace things like this, then life becomes much easier to manage.
When you as a family got the diagnosis for your son, and when the dust had settled and a little clarity came into perspective, did it give you a different perspective on life?
Absolutely. It really did. I was working at a really demanding, exciting job that I loved, and working a lot, as we do in Dubai, as you mentioned earlier. And it made me stop and pause and realize, you know, what's really important. I loved my work, but I loved my son more, and he needed me, and I took a long leave of absence. I changed my job in the company I was in at that time, and I was really able to focus and hone in on what really mattered to me in my life. And over the years, raising him up as a child that happens to have one type diabetes, that vision becomes more clear every year of what I really want to do with my life.
And again, I mean, just to go back to this story from CNN about Ikigai and the philosophy of, is that something that you need to remind yourself of every morning, this idea of waking up in the morning, and goes back to the sort of carpe diem approach as well of seizing the day. If you have to remind yourself of why you're getting up every morning, is that a problem, or is that just a sort of reassurance of what you're doing?
I think if you're getting up every morning and if it's hard, if it feels heavy, if you think, I don't want to do this again, then maybe take a pause and look introspectively at why it is you do what you do. Maybe you want to make some changes, maybe not. But, you know, maybe make a reminder. And since I left the corporate world 2 years ago and have been working with people with diabetes, because this is what I really want to do and I'm incredibly passionate about it, there's not a day that I wake up and I think, oh, I don't want to do this, because I truly love what I want to do.
We have Pamela Durant as our special guest here in studio. We've been talking diabetes with good reason for the last hour or so. But we need to wrap up our conversation over a cup of joe as well. And I don't really know where to go with this one, because I know as soon as I use the phrase Turkish coffee, it is going to divide opinions out there, Pamela, because everyone I meet seems to know an alternative recipe for the perfect cup of Turkish.
Yes, there's many ways to do it. And here in this region, for example, people love cardamom in it. My husband is Turkish, and I lived in Istanbul for 8 years, and we don't put cardamom in our Turkish coffee. The first time I tasted one here, I was like, ooh, what is that? But I thought this would be nice to finish on, not to divide people, but to bring people together.
Nice.
Because it's always served after a meal that you share with friends or family. And I actually shared this article. I loved it so much. And I wrote, it talks about, you know, why coffee is good for you. But what they failed to mention was the social aspect of it, the good times that you share with friends. In Istanbul, it's with a beautiful view of the Bosphorus. Mm. And that's what I wanted to focus on.
What is Turkish coffee? How do you define it?
I define Turkish coffee as really strong coffee that's made in a manual process. where you put coffee in with water and you boil it together. And there's a certain art to doing that, putting it on the stove, taking it off, because the froth on the top that you get is extremely important.
Mm.
I'm told traditionally in Turkey that they would judge a future bride by how well the froth came out on her Turkish coffee. And I got frightened and I said, please don't ask me to make one because I'm not sure I could do it. But it's such a social drink and brings people together.
Oh, it's strong. It is a very robust and rich brew. It's not what you're going to find in an American diner anytime soon, that's
no,
for sure.
No, and you're not supposed to drink the grinds in the bottom.
Are you not?
No. You just drink the coffee at the top. Traditionally, you would turn the cup over and let it cool down, and then people like to, you know, play and read the coffee grinds that are left. It's like looking at the clouds.
But what surprised me about this article is the fact that it is becoming more and more popular, not just in Turkey, but the world over. I suppose that's in line with people becoming more savvy about the coffee they're drinking, the beans that they're roasting, the way that they're preparing their coffee. Have you seen that? Have you seen a spike in interest?
Yeah, I think so. And people are, like you said, more interested in coffee, in food, and many things from this region of the world. So, yeah, it was no surprise to me to find this.
And again, like we said a bit earlier, you will find endless bits of research, one telling you that coffee is not good for you, others telling you that coffee is great for you and has benefits. But as you're saying, it's not so much that the health benefits, it's more of the mental benefits, isn't it? The social benefits.
Yes, I think so. As you point out, I'm a coffee drinker.
Mm.
I really enjoy my coffee. And when I see an article that supports that, I'm really happy. Sometimes, yes, there are articles or schools of thought that do not recommend it. But yes, the social aspect of it, I think, is so important. And it goes back to focusing on those very small things and what we're grateful for.
Mm. So no cardamom. Cinnamon?
No.
Sugar?
I don't even use sugar anymore. You can, in the beauty of ordering a Turkish coffee, you can ask for no sugar, a little sugar, or more sugar. And I've slowly weaned myself over the years. I enjoy it, so I can, no sugar.
Right. I will, I've got to try a Pam Durant Turkish coffee at some point, so I'll take you to task on that one a little later on. But we really appreciate your time this morning. Look, we've got to wrap things up. We've had lots of very, very complimentary text messages. This one pretty much sums them up as well, saying, my mother, my brother, and my grandmother all have diabetes. I know the struggle. It's not easy. Can't join the conversations I'm driving at the moment, but I just want to send my greetings to Pam. That's from Nadia out there at the moment.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Bless your family.
Listen, Pam, if people want to find out more, I mean, I know that you've made this your life. As you mentioned, you get up every day. Looking forward to helping people who are coming to terms with diabetes or coming to terms with diagnosis or misdiagnosis, the lifestyle changes as well. If people have listened into this conversation, if people are taking note of what today is globally, and they want to find out more information, what's your advice to them?
There's numerous websites out there. I'm happy to share anything that I know, any resources that I have. And you can come to my website at diapointme.com, diapointme.com, and send me an email as well at pam@diapointme.com. And you are not alone if you have diabetes. I promise you that.
Pam, lovely to chat with you. All the best to you. All the best to Aaron as well on
Thank
World
you.
But Diabetes Day. Give him the playlist on the way back from school today.
I will. He'll love it. Thank you so much.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.